Welcome to another Spiritual Hollywood Hour, and I want to say thank you to Don Newsom at VBS Radio for making Spiritual Hollywood possible, and I want to tell you that I'm Kate Romero. I'm your host this evening, and I have the extreme pleasure of having an esteemed guest on this evening that I've been so excited to introduce to you, and her name is Charlotte Castle. She is the author of several books. She's written seven books, and she's working on an eighth. And the book that got my attention to Charlotte is called If the Buddha Dated. And I'm telling you, after reading this book, I am just so blown away by how much I did not know. And being a full-blown grown-up of 50 years old, and, you know, I have three husbands, and thought a lot of experience with life. But when I read this book, I realized that I made so much more out of everything than I needed to. I forgot to apply amusement to everyday living and everyday loving. And with the Buddhist way, it is to look at life with amusement and humor and be in the moment and not attach outcomes and to just let people be who they are, including yourself. And it was just an amazing experience to me to where I tracked Miss Castle down and have her as my guest this evening. And before I bring her on, I'm going to share with you a bit of her bio, which is quite lengthy and worth every word that I can read to you, so stand by. And if you want to pull up her website while I am speaking, that would be a terrific idea. Her website is www.charlottecastle.com, and that is charlottecastle.com. So if you want to pull up her website while I'm speaking, that would be a great idea. So here it is. Charlotte Castle has an MA in music from the University of Michigan and a PhD in counseling psychology from Ohio University. Dr. Castle was a licensed psychologist in Minnesota for 15 years and is a licensed professional clinical counselor in Montana. She is a certified addiction specialist in the areas of chemical dependency and sexuality, has had a private psychotherapy practice for 25 years, and has been a Reiki master, healer for 18 years. Dr. Castle was part of a task force funded by the State of Minnesota Department of Human Services to create a model treatment program for chemically dependent women. She has served on several advisory boards, including the Women's Recovery Network, the Women's Action Alliance for Alcohol and Drug Education, and the Organization for Secular Sobriety, also known as Save Ourselves, SOS. Wow, that's very clever. Mm-hmm. She was invited by the National Center for Substance Abuse Prevention to participate in a synthesis conference to make recommendations on the needs of women. Dr. Castle has consulted with numerous treatment programs and is a founding member of ATTACH, which is ATTACH, the acronym for the Association for the Teaching and Training in the Attachment of Children. Interesting. Dr. Castle is the author of seven books and has begun work on her eighth book. The thread running through all of her work is helping people find their own voice, amen to that, accept themselves, and develop a spiritual and social consciousness that increases understanding and compassion for all people. Dr. Castle writes with clarity, warmth, and immediacy that allows her to connect with a wide range of people. She has also written numerous articles and has appeared on over 200 radio and television programs, including New Dimensions Radio, Donahue, Joan London, Sally Jesse Raphael, Geraldo, and People Are Talking. Dr. Castle taught a wide variety of workshops and talks on relationships, addiction, sexuality, spirituality, community, healing from incest and abuse, casting out internalized oppression, preventing burnout, quantum healing, empowerment, and finding joy. And I can attest to this. I mean, wait till you read this woman's books. Dr. Castle's empowerment model for recovery from addiction, described in Many Roads, One Journey, has had a major impact on the addiction field. Dr. Castle interviewed counselors and those in recovery in several different treatment programs across the country. The 16-step empowerment model brings a flexible, socially conscious approach to recovery and seeks to build self-esteem and empower people to find their own voice. Numerous programs throughout the United States and Canada for battered women, pregnant addicted women, Native Americans, African Americans, addicted teenagers, and women in prison have adopted the 16-step program. Dr. Castle has been listed in Self magazine as one of the 50 SAGE psychologists in the United States. In 1997, she received a Lifetime Achievement Award from the National Council on Sexual Addiction and Compulsivity for her work with women and sexuality. In 2000, If the Buddha Dated was one of the 5 finalists for the National Books for Better Living Awards. Dr. Castle, a member of the Quakers, the Society of Friends, is an accomplished pianist and avid hiker. Hello, Dr. Charlotte.
Hello there.
My goodness, I am dizzy from your accomplishments here, and I'm sure that you just keep on cranking them out.
Well, I've lived a long time, and I just keep plugging away.
Yes.
And how you do it.
That's very, very evident in the effect and the impact that you're having on our planet today, because one person certainly can make a difference. And I know from experience, after finding you in If the Buddha Dated, that you impacted me to the point where it's hard for me to have a conversation with anybody without bringing up your books. So
wow.
I get that you channeled these books because they are such higher wisdom that I can't imagine just a regular human thinking of all this stuff.
Well, you know, I think we all tap into the kind of bigger mind. You know, when we step aside of our ego and our me and my separate self, it's kind of an experience of sitting back and thinking, okay, what needs to get said here? And kind of being an open, well, I wouldn't say they're channeled from any particular place, except that there's just truths in the universe and you try to hear them. And, of course, it filters through all of my own experience.
Right. When I say channel, it's just coming from your highest best wisdom. And
yeah. And
it comes out probably, if I'm not mistaken, it has an immediacy about it to where it just flows out of you as if it's just an urgent message that needs to be brought about. Am I accurate on that?
Well, I certainly am passionate when I write. You know, it's like, what do I want to have said? What do I think people need to hear? What do I need to hear?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's my story, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like listening till it feels just simple, clear, down to earth. And it kind of, you know, I come from Missoula, Montana. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. just be straight about it, you know. And I'm also a little bit attention deficit disordered, so I've always had a hard time reading anything that's very complex.
Wow.
But I just want it simple and clear and to the point so I could understand it.
Yeah, well, that's what I got from If the Buddha Dated, and I immediately purchased not only If the Buddha Dated, but If the Buddha Got Married, and also If the Buddha Were Stuck. And I'm just going over your website here, looking for all the titles of your books, and you've got one that's called Yes, You Can, A Guide to Empowerment Groups.
Right.
And you've got one that is A Home for the Heart, Practical Guide to Intimate and Social Relationships, a clear, affirming book that takes readers by the hand, empathizes with their fears, and helps them learn to relate to others in ways that are appropriate, honest, and nurturing.
Mm-hmm.
You're just so gifted. And then another book you wrote is Finding Joy.
And that book is very dear to my heart.
The 101 Ways to Free Your Spirit and
yes.
with Life.
Nice. You know, I had written these 2 major books, and Women's Sex and Addiction, A Search for Love and Power, and then Many Roads, One Journey, Moving Beyond the 12 Steps, and they both had, you know, 100 interviews or more and lots of questionnaires. And then I moved back to Montana, which is my heart place.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to write something very happy. And some of the wisdom in that certainly comes from the Ken Kai's early trainings I went to. And then I kept track of what clients told me helped them do better in life.
Right.
So a lot of it comes out of, you know, I fed stuff to them, and then they fed back to me what worked. And I kept track of that for quite a few years
mm-hmm.
and put it in the book.
Wonderful.
When I'm writing, what happens is that I'm sitting there, I'm pondering how to get this across, and I just close my eyes and scan whatever thought or scene comes to mind. I also keep tons of clippings out of the newspaper.
Right, right.
So these stories are there that just catch me and touch me. I don't know how I'm going to use them, but I really lead with where the energy is perky for me, where it has, you know, brightness
mm-hmm.
and touches my heart. And then I have all these stories, and we learn from stories, you know.
Yeah.
So I put in stories because I think they bring the point across. And again, I get bored easily reading, so I want to write something that I would want to read, you know.
Right, right. And also you have something called If the Buddha Were in Love, which is audio cassettes that you just discovered were out of print, and you none left, so thankfully you found another copy to make some more of them for sale.
Right, I'm going to try to get a CD made. And you know, if they get enough requests, they'll print them again. It's really a shame because people have liked those tapes a lot.
And right, and I, you know, maybe after this interview, you'll have reason to have some more made up, which I hope so. And here's what it says about that. If the Buddha Were in Love, the Spiritual Guide to Love and Intimacy. It's four audio cassettes, and it invites you to use the keys to love to discover a deeper way of connecting and loving. The Chemistry of Sexual Attraction, How to Get Honest with Yourself on the Path of Love, Exercises for Facing Jealousy, the Fear of Intimacy, and Other Obstacles to True Connection, a Red Flag Checklist for Identifying and Preventing Potential Relation Disasters, Secrets to Passionate and Enduring Love, and much, much more. And that is such a teaser, because I want those tapes yesterday.
Yeah.
I want to, because I have such a deep passion for human nature.
Mm-hmm.
And why we all do the things we do, especially me. I'm my best case study.
Well, it's fascinating, isn't it, to watch ourselves? It's like, why did
I know, Charlotte. If I dream up a concept or get it from my highest best self and I apply it to myself and I have breakthroughs around that new information for myself, then I apply it to my life coaching, career coaching, and I do something mm-hmm. called intuitive mediation, where I have the ability to speak with someone and, with their permission, go in and find their internal conflict and present it to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, once it's in their awareness, they can make an intelligent choice around it.
Right.
And I haven't met anyone who wished to keep it. They usually do give it up, which is very, very freeing. And then we replace it with something that they can actually use to bring them what they want in their lives. So marvelous tools, just really marvelous tools. And I wanted to ask you as well a question after I bring to your attention. I don't know if I mentioned this to you or not, or if you know about it already, but excuse me, Guardian Angel represents, that's my company, I'm a talent manager,
right,
as well as many other things. But my client is Jeff Van Vonderen, who is the interventionist, one of the three, I believe, on the show Intervention for A&E that's on every Sunday night at 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Mm-hmm.
A marvelous, marvelous show. Have you seen it, Charlotte?
I haven't.
Have you heard of it?
No.
We're in our third season, and they said it couldn't be done, that nobody would care, and it is a runaway hit. And
it's
not only...
Interventionist.
Pardon?
It's on doing interventions?
Yes.
You know, I did click on that one day. I was actually very gripped by watching it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what channel it was on.
A&E.
It was on A&E. Okay, I did see it.
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
Yeah, and you do a lot of the same work that Jeff does. And Jeff and I met back when he did an intervention on a Christian alcoholic client of mine, a former client.
Mm-hmm.
And you know yourself that with Christianity, you can't even admit that you drink, let alone that your body's depending on it, right?
Well, when you get caught up in you have to be good and all those things, weakness, quote, is bad.
Yes.
You get a lot of shame wrapped around those things instead of, you know, we're all such imperfect mortals, you know, schlepping through life the best we can. And, you know, there's not so much good and bad as Buddhism doesn't talk about those things much at all. There's about levels of being awake.
Yes.
You know, and if we're really awake, we would never want to hurt another person or exploit them, because we look in the eyes of that person and we resonate so deeply with their fears and joys and hopes in the world that we wouldn't want to hurt them, because it'd be like hurting ourselves.
Yes. because we're all connected.
Yeah.
Right. I couldn't agree more.
And that really takes you into relationships in a sense about it's not just the hunt to find the person to fill up those needs, although it's not bad to have needs, but it's how do we put together two energies and have this alchemy of I and you and create the us place. And that us place becomes the special bond of those two people that's like no other bond.
Mm-hmm.
It has a special quality to it, a tremendous protectiveness of each other, and a protectiveness of the bond itself.
Mm-hmm.
And to bring it down to earth, it's kind of like, well, let's see, I'm thinking of doing something or taking off for the weekend, but I wouldn't dream of doing it without talking to my partner because they live in my heart. So I have an awareness of myself and my needs, but I also simultaneously have an awareness of my partner or my lover, my you know, spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, well, what are their needs for the weekend? Because I wouldn't want to hurt them. I wouldn't want to upset them, but I want to do what I want to do. And how do we bring that together? And that's what's so important in relationships. And I interviewed lots of happily married couples, and there are more than we think.
Yes.
And that was just second nature to them.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolutely second nature to be deeply considerate and sensitive to their partner, but not abdicate their own need to figure out who they are, too.
Mm-hmm.
And they could work together on that.
So that's conscious relating.
It's very conscious relating, and it's instead of saying, well, I have a need, so I've got to sneak off like a little kid and meet it. It's like, hey, I have a right to my needs.
Mm-hmm.
If people don't think they have a right to do what's fun for them, they end up being sneaky about it sometimes or feeling guilty about it.
Yes,
or they're lying about it. And that's what creates the problems, not the need itself. I mean, if you want to go hang out with friends and watch a football game all afternoon and your partner doesn't, talk it over and say, honey, I love you and I really want to do this and I know you don't care about it, but can we meet afterwards? You know,
mm-hmm.
can we do this, do that?
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of thing that's second nature to people. Who
right,
are
right. And when you, and when a, in a relationship, when you start sensing the sneakiness or the lying or the out of integrity, that's when the trust begins to crumble. And when the trust begins to crumble, the relationship also crumbles because you're not being authentic with one another.
Well, yeah, the trust is like the bedrock.
It's everything.
And it's honesty. You know, Gandhi said truth is, but he said, I'm a passionate seeker after truth, which is but another name for God. And
mm-hmm.
truth is such a deep thing to think about because it's not just, yeah, I took the cookies out of the cookie jar. It's listening deep inside and saying, what is my motivation about? You know, why am I buying this super present here? Is it because I feel guilty about something and I want to, or I want to bribe my partner? Or is it out of just an effervescence of love and joy that's coming up inside of me?
Yeah, overflowing.
Yeah. Where is it coming from? And if it's coming out of a need to get something in return, it's better to stop and be more direct.
Yeah.
And then buy the present.
Yeah. Well, you know what this is bringing up for me is I'm the kind of person who all my life, whenever there was an opportunity to dance, I danced. I didn't wait for someone to invite me to dance. I didn't wait for someone to ask me. As a matter of fact, most of the time when I dance, it's by myself. And it's not so I can just be reclusive. It's because I just want to express myself.
Mm-hmm.
And in that vein, I found that when I buy myself flowers or take myself out to dinner, just because I enjoy my own company, just because I care for myself, that kind of intention behind getting a gift for somebody, the kind of intention you would have for getting a gift for yourself
mm-hmm.
is really the authentic intention because you're really not wanting to do anything except create pleasure and say I love you and express affection. And I'm finding for myself that if I buy a gift or get something or do something nice for someone I care about, it's for the same reasons I do those things for me.
Yes. And, you know, it can be something you picked up at a yard sale. It's
mm-hmm.
a thought. It truly is. I remember I had a friend years back, and we used to give each other little tiny presents all the time. And it'd be just some little thing that, oh, that makes me think of her, and I'd pick it out. As you're talking, I'm sitting here looking at this beautiful bouquet of lilies, and I think of flowers as food. You know, they're food for my spirit.
Me too.
I just love having flowers. I have this beautiful candle lit.
So do I.
It has a nice...
I got flowers.
It has a nice... it's red, kind of a deep red, and it just is pretty, and it wakes me up and makes me feel good. And I think we need... That's part of mindfulness.
Yes.
Is to touch around ourselves with things that are soothing, are beautiful,
mm-hmm.
simple,
mm-hmm.
and get rid of all the things that really get in the way of that.
Yeah, the jagged edges.
Yeah, the jagged edges on the inside, and what I'm working on is the junk on the outside. Because they, you know, it's anything that's clutter in the mind, clutter
yeah.
in the heart, like unfinished business with another person, you know?
Yes, yes, and I believe people who have a lot of clutter around them, it's because of internal clutter, but also I believe they have clutter around them because they trust things more than they trust people or themselves.
It can be, but you know, we it gets risky to make those, to be totally generalized about it, because
mm-hmm.
I used to feel so guilty about my clutter stuff, that, you know, articles and stacks of papers that come in. And because you can go into a house and everything's absolutely perfect and people are totally nervous and uptight, too, you
mm-hmm.
know. It's really... it's the heart that's behind it, I think. I think clutter does get in the way, and it's good to clear things out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just it's a mixture.
It's like being
people.
Stuck. And there's positive clutter as well, Charlotte. I wouldn't want to imply that if anyone's got some stuff that's not filed away that they've got an issue that they
mm-hmm.
need to address. No, it's just someone who has so much clutter in their living room that there's nowhere to turn around.
Right. Or that I think the hanging on to things.
Yes, that. The pack rat syndrome.
Well, it's for all of us. We can look at that, and we can also look at why can't I sit down and relax for 5 minutes with a piece of lint on the floor? The dish is not all done, you know.
Which is another ism. It's another thing that, for instance, in my experience with people and being a coach as well, I can notice if somebody is extraordinarily anal about everything in its place. I know that they are overcompensating for something. I mean, it sends me looking for what is that thing they're overcompensating for.
Well, what you're trying to do usually when you're any compulsive behavior is trying to control the anxiety and the feelings inside. If I feel chaotic inside and out of control and I'm scared of my feelings, then I always want the TV on, the radio on, everything absolutely perfect, or I get anxious inside.
Mm-hmm.
It's not... When we do things like that, it's more to relieve the anxiety than any intrinsic pleasure people get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's to stop those chaotic feelings inside.
To numb.
And the only way we're going to ever get anywhere is to sit down and let the rain fall on our heads and feel those things.
Yes, absolutely, and to become sensitized again.
Because I've said to myself, you know, if I had to have everything in perfect shape to write a book, I'd never get a book written.
There's you know, there's a good point.
You just have to say, I'm sitting down to write. You know, and the other thing is I get help.
Mm-hmm.
If I need help, like one time for my birthday, I called a temp agency and hired someone to come and help me clean out the basement.
Oh, how wonderful.
I couldn't have given myself a better present.
Yeah.
And we had a fun time and we became friends after that. It was great.
Wonderful.
Had a good time.
What a great idea.
Yeah.
I would hire a maid myself, except I don't know where to put everything myself, and I would
yes.
have to figure out where it goes before I could have that person put
right.
it somewhere. So, but I wanted to address something in your book, but I don't want to digress too much because
right.
I want to put a bookmark in talking about the 16-step model for overcoming addiction.
Oh, okay. I'd love to talk about that.
Yeah, and finding personal power and building self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
But after just, I want to make sure that I get to say this to our listeners. There's an extraordinary chapter. Actually, all the chapters are extraordinary, and I hope I'm not embarrassing you, Charlotte, by being so absolutely bowled over by your work. But I am. It certainly resonates with me, all of it. It's chapter 14 in If a Buddha Dated. And what I want to do is I want to go down the traits of fusion
okay.
in that chapter. And then right after I go down the traits of fusion and allow our listeners to think about that, I would like to go down the traits of differentiation. And the traits of fusion are pretty much, would you define that as being a sort of enmeshment, Charlotte?
Well, it's tricky because we're all dependent on each other. And at some point, or some way, we are fused together. Okay, there's the oneness of that I and you us place.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, the places where people get into defensiveness, fear, or when that list diffusion you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
when all of a sudden what you think is more important to me than what I think,
mm-hmm.
and I start faking it with you because I'm so afraid
mm-hmm.
of losing you. And it's permeated by fear. Fear of being alone, fear of losing someone, fear I can't manage life by myself, fear of what people say and then I'll be ashamed, you know, fear
mm-hmm.
of the chaos inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay,
yeah.
So fusion is in the way that you mean it in your book, is just about that fear, coming from that fear of loss.
Yeah, like it says, losing oneself in close relationships.
Right.
And losing oneself, like second-guessing others, it's kind of, you're scanning them all the time to see what they need instead of being aware of yourself. And that's usually a direct result of growing up in a family where survival meant scanning what's going on so you could figure out the best shot at not getting hit, hurt, shamed, and whatever.
Yes. And that's what causes a lot of timidness in people, because they were so criticized that they won't put themselves out there and be self-expressed anymore.
Right. And the paradox is that a healing relationship where you do build trust can help heal those wounded bonds from the past.
Yes.
Now, the second one I have here, you know, again, I've thought about this more since I wrote it. It's kind of a paradox. Having one's self-esteem or mood infected or affected by others' anxieties and worries. Now, it's one thing to resonate with a partner when they're to feel that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's okay. But it's like if, you know, they don't have a job and I'm looking in the paper for the job,
right.
you know, and they're not doing it at all, then that gets to be, you know, whose problem is it?
Yeah, codependency.
Yeah.
And enabling. Right. And that goes hand in hand with all of this work you do around addiction and the loss of self. Because we're taught to be selfless, basically, early in life.
Yes.
And it's real easy to go astray. And a lot of people, even if they had the most enlightened parents in the universe, it's still largely an insane world. And if you don't believe that, open a history book. So there's always stuff that we need to gain consciousness over. And there are ways that we tune out that we're not even aware of that are in a blind spot.
Right.
And I believe that your books are really great at helping us, lovingly coaxing us to take a look and just turn on that flashlight and look around and see what the heck's inside of us and go, wow, that's what that is over there.
Right, and be amused, interested, fascinated,
yeah,
curious.
Yeah, fascinated. I mean, really, I gave myself such a break after reading this book.
Oh, that's great.
Totally. I am so much more in love with me, and that's not anything to do with ego.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm lovable, and I'm endearing, and I'm conscientious and caring and enthusiastic and all the things that I wanted to one day be, I already am. And I'm giving myself a break. You know, I have compassion for the ways I used to be and the reasons I was that way. And there's a lot to be said for consciousness, and we're all on our journey, and where we are is absolutely perfect until we get to the next place.
Well, you know, I'd like to go back to that word you used, compassion, because it gets bantered around a lot, but it's a very big, embracing word, and it's like almost the deepest level of consciousness, because I always think of it as a great big, my arms are outstretched, but I'm not holding someone. I'm just making a space for them to be who they are, and I make a space for myself to be who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And Stephen and Andrea Levine wrote a beautiful book, Embracing the Beloved, and one of the things they said is that when we make room for the suffering in our own hearts, then we can make room for the suffering of others. But
mm-hmm.
if we're not aware of the pain in our own hearts or the grief or the losses, as well as the joys, then how can we make space for it in other people?
Mm-hmm.
Because if I don't have my joy and go after what I want in life, you know, follow my talents, my energy, then how can I be totally happy for another person doing that? There's going to be a little edge of hurt or pain. And I might even then throw cold water on their joy and their happiness.
And a lot of people do that every day, Charlotte. You see it every day. And when I see people behaving in that way, I feel immediate compassion for them, whereas I used to, before I felt compassion for myself, would see them as troublemakers.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I have compassion for myself, I can look at somebody who they're completely out of shape, they're completely bitter, they have a frown on their faces. I don't look at them like they're just an overweight loser. I look at them like, oh my gosh, the emotional baggage they're carrying around. If they just cared more about themselves, I know that I could help them somehow to begin to do that. I'm not thinking, you know, what a loser or what a this or a that. I'm looking at a person who is a winner who just forgot that they are.
Well, or, you know, it goes back to the concept of waking up.
Right.
Because when we're kind of asleep, and we can have various levels of being awake and asleep throughout our days and
mm-hmm.
in certain situations.
Literally.
And awareness is a hard thing to come by. It's not simple, and we can't really do it in our heads. You know, Buddhism is very much about experience, and so is the Quaker tradition. It's like, until I feel that sorrow in my heart or that joy, really experience it, then I don't know it yet. I can talk about it. I can have phrases I use. But unless I really get it in my gut, and I think when I'm writing, what I do is I go back to my experience all the time. What made me feel ashamed and want to cry or when I finally made more peace with myself and could look back on myself as a kind of goofy adolescent and wrap my arms around myself in a sense and say, I understand, and I'm part of you and you're part of me, and I don't hate you anymore.
Wonderful.
But it doesn't happen easily.
No.
I think it's easy to try to make it happen, but I think if we make a commitment to being very aware, you know, one of the things of Buddhism is about living in reality, seeing
mm-hmm.
reality or truth, and it's like, well, what is it I'm really wanting, and who is this person really? Am I jumping into this because I hate being alone? Excuse me, or I want to be able to say I'm in a relationship?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this feeling good? You know, am I inching into it? It feels nice. Let's go a step further. Let's test the waters. Very, you know, early stages in relationships are not comfortable generally because we don't know the person. So we're testing the waters, and then what will happen if we have a disagreement or if I have a need that conflicts with that person, like I may need to go visit an old friend and the other person wants to see me. How do we deal with that? It's not the issue itself so much, it's how do we talk about it?
Right.
Do they come and say, well, you don't care about me and you don't love me and if you do that, you just, you know, whatever. Or like, yeah, that's okay, I understand you want to go see them, I'll be fine. It's a whole different world.
And I'll be here when you get back.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I have the thing in here about being dependent on others to comfort and soothe us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in a healthy relationship, people comfort and soothe each other all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But the being dependent on, the question is, can I also, if nobody's there, what can I do for myself?
Mm-hmm.
So by that, I don't mean it's bad to want comfort and soothing. In fact, I think we should allow those needs to be much fuller and more deeply felt for most people.
Because mm-hmm.
what I see in clients is they'll say, oh, I feel weak to need that, or I feel like I'm being a baby. And I'll say, yeah, well, great. You know, we all have those needs for comfort and soothing if we get honest with ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just part of being.
It's our wiring. It's human.
Mm-hmm.
We're tribal people. We're meant to live in community.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, So that's where I have some caveats when I read what I wrote here. Okay, if there is nobody around, can I not go have a drink or hurt myself or get panicky and go spend $500?
Mm-hmm.
Can I sit down? Can I breathe? Can I just sit with the emptiness or the sadness and be okay with it?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Not even okay, just be with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this ability to tolerate what's going on inside is very much a part of relationships. Because
mm-hmm.
if I can't tolerate my inner stress or anxiety or something, then I'm going to get demanding or fearful or clinging to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if I can soothe myself, I'm going to be able to kind of rest easy. The other thing is, though, that relationships are very much a dance. It's
mm-hmm.
like... as you know, when you're with different people, you feel differently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because we bring out different things in each other. And I've done a lot of training with Susan Johnson's emotionally focused couple therapy, which I really love doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always about the pattern between the two people. It's not like I'm just a fixed way or you're a fixed way. It's like, okay, if the other person withholds, then what's my part of the pattern? Well, if I jump in and scream at them, you've left me, and I panic and go after them, okay, then I'm pursuing and then the other person's panicking more and shutting down more. And then they can say, see, well, no wonder I don't talk to you. You're so pushy.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow you try to see that pattern, how it goes back and forth, and throw in a way to shift it. Help people understand each other really differently. Because often it goes from things like the person shuts down, and according to Gottman's research on couples, it's 80% of the time the man. But it can be in same-sex relationships or whatever, that one person shuts down, and the other person adds all this meaning to it, such as you don't care about me, you don't love me, you don't like me, you know, you just go away. But the person stonewalling or shutting down is usually very panicked. They feel incompetent. They'll say things like, well, I just feel so stupid. I don't know what you want. And I'll check. I said, is your heart beating? Is your palm sweating? I say, yeah, how'd you know? Because they're really in a kind of panic, fight, flight, freeze state. So it's often that we're misperceiving and misjudging what that person is doing. We're misinterpreting.
Because we're making it all about us.
Well, about us, and we're just, right, we're making it about us.
Yeah.
Yeah, what that means.
Instead of identifying that they're having an issue, maybe they could use a little support and comfort.
Right, and when we get, it's kind of we're triggered is what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Automatic.
Mm-hmm. We go back to a kind of earlier age state in a way, and there's this panic. And I work a lot with some forms of therapy that help people process that kind of panic so they get down to it. For example,
wonderful.
One woman who panicked when the other partner shut down.
Mm-hmm.
We did it, and we went back, and she'd have a memory and drop back. And finally, she cracked into the deepest memory, which was coming home and finding her mother passed out on the couch and thinking her mother was dead.
Right.
And that was the source of the nervous system, the limbic system of the brain getting wired for this panic.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't realize that when her partner shut down and turned off, the level of her panic was far more about that little girl than anything present time.
Post-traumatic stress is just as real as if it's happening again right now today.
Yeah. And so once she got that process so it didn't go off in the nervous system, then if he shut down, she could not like it, but she didn't panic.
Right.
It was different. She could say, and then she could work on being helpful, like, hey, honey, are you scared? Or do you need something? Or would you like me to touch you? Or what would you like?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, see, you don't like me.
Exactly. Well, I can tell you for myself that I knew when I was going into a relationship with ego, and I knew when it shifted to going into a relationship with spirit. And I'm telling you, it is night and day, and the results are just as night and day.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I go into it with ego, it is all about me.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever they're doing, it's about me. And I had to realize, R-E-A-L-E-Y-E-S, that I was being so self-centered that I couldn't even blame anybody for being upset with me.
Well, and yeah, it's about how can I get what I want to fix my life, fill me up, even though things are bad, as opposed to, what would it be like to really know someone?
Yeah, let them know you.
Yeah, and let them, to be transparent together.
Yes.
To explore what love is really about, real
yes.
love. Not
and, it, and it's not anxiety, and it's not an urgency, and it's not something where you just, you can tell when something's going to crash and burn because of the intensity it starts out with.
Right, and the thing is also, how do you deal with the intensity? How do you deal when it crashes? Some of the people I interviewed had the great rush and fell in love, and it came down, but they're still together 30, 40 years later because they knew enough to say, they knew that wouldn't last forever, and they got down to the nitty-gritty of everyday life together.
Mm-hmm.
But other people walk into my therapy office and say, we want to get back to how it was the first 6 months.
Yeah,
but they don't realize that was a kind of amphetamine high. I mean,
yeah.
We are marvelously hardwired to mate and procreate.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get that bath of hormones.
Yeah, what do you do when the infatuation wears off? That's the question.
Yeah, and how can you enjoy it when you have it?
Mm-hmm.
And know it's not there forever, but the wonderful trade-off is that after a couple settles in and there's this us place where there's this deep care, then you start secreting the hormone oxytocin,
mm-hmm.
which is it's the same thing mothers secrete when they're nursing, which is very pleasurable and very soothing. And that's how people feel this incredible loving connection, this tenderness, this caring.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a wonderful thing. And, of course, the pharmaceuticals want to manufacture it and sell it. And that would be a terrible thing.
Communication is the best way to get it.
It's what you earn for walking the path.
Absolutely.
You know? And you can't get down the path with a pill.
No, you cannot. I mean, a lot of people try to, but they end up falling down. Before we run out of time here, because we're coming up on the end of the hour, and I'm telling you, Charlotte, I think I need to have you on again just to, like, maybe a couple more times to really get into some of the richness of, I mean, we've touched the surface, but there's just so much more to it. I just hope people will go to your website and give themselves the gift of your gifts. And I'm going to now read, before we run out of time, the traits of fusion. Number one, losing oneself in close relationships, second-guessing others, monitoring one's behavior to please others, worrying what others will think of you. Number two trait of fusion is having one's self-esteem, mood, affected by others' anxieties and worries. Three, measuring self-worth by external validation, praise, grades, money, status, looks, weight, and so on. Very, very valid for actors. Four, reacting unconsciously out of childhood conditioning, teachings, or trauma. We frequently have sudden flashes of fear, hurt, anger, fear, or resentment that are more intense than the situation warrants, and we've discussed that. Five, blaming others. We perceive the world, people, and machines as doing it to us, rather than seeing our part in the dramas and problems that we experience. Six, defensiveness in the face of criticism, different ideologies, approaches, and beliefs. 7, needing to be right or always believing that we are wrong. 8, being dependent on others to comfort and soothe us. 9, having difficulty giving others or giving with an agenda. Having difficulty giving to others or giving with an agenda. 10, bonding in righteousness, pain, or as victims. We portray ourselves as a wounded bird or sorrowful victim of life to invite sympathy or pity. 11, engaging in compulsive and addictive behaviors. 12, changing our persona or behavior to please or control others. 13, rescuing people, big one, worrying for them, being overly dramatic about problems. 14, staying in harmful, painful relationships out of fear and dependency or fear of being on one's own. Those were some of the traits of fusion. And now I'm going to read immediately the traits of differentiation just to get the contrast because without contrast, it's hard to get clarity. So this is marvelous that we have this to come right on the heels of the fusion with. Traits of differentiation. 1, maintaining one's center in relationships. This includes valuing integrity in all aspects of life and being able to define oneself to say yes, no, and maybe. It also means being able to articulate feelings, take good care of oneself, and be truthful even when it requires bringing up difficult subjects. 2, having one's self-esteem and mood remain constant in the presence of another's anxieties and worries. We remain compassionate and supportive without becoming emotionally entangled when a friend or loved one is anxious, depressed, or going through a hard time. Instead of absorbing those feelings or feeling responsible to fix the problem, smooth it over, or give advice, and remain a loving witness instead.
Right, and what I want to say about that is that, you know, it doesn't mean we don't feel for another person. You know, that our heart doesn't beat for them sometimes when they're in pain. But it's like we don't fall into it.
You can't help if you've cut your arm off, too.
Right. But it's like not wrapping my life around the worries of another, but more wishing them well with their worries, wishing them well with their difficulties instead of trying to be used. It's mostly that if I become anxious about it and try to fix it,
that's where
we get in trouble with it. As opposed to, I can be around you if you're anxious and upset. I hope you do something about it after a while, because it does permeate the atmosphere.
I feel the best thing to do to support someone in that situation is to be a loving witness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dogs really have it all together because they know when their master or owner is upset or going through a hard time, they'll just sit there next to them and just be there if they need a lick or a little bit of love. They'll just sit there quietly, or they'll go off and play in another room if the master wants to be alone. It's like we really can take a lesson from our pets.
Yeah.
Because they know just what to do when we're hurting.
Yeah, they're very soothing.
They're very soothing. That's why there's so many pets. So, three, and thank you for that, Charlotte. Knowing that one's value is a given, our self-worth remains constant in the face of winning, losing, succeeding, failing, and pain or pleasure, because we know our value is inherent in being alive.
Mm-hmm.
We are all sacred beings interrelated to all life.
Right. We could spend the whole evening on that.
Oh, yes, we could. Four, developing a set of values through reflection, awareness, learning, and experimentation instead of relying on external authority or determine our beliefs and values. We learn to trust our internal wisdom that comes through experience, contemplation, and meditation. This often means casting off much of what we learned in our families, schools, and religious institutions. Yes, please. Five, feeling comfortable or fascinated by different theories, belief systems, and perspectives. Because we're secure in our own values or beliefs, it doesn't matter if anyone agrees with us or not. Differences are natural, unthreatening, and interesting. They offer a glimpse into another's world. Instead of immediately jumping into our armor, I do it this way, we are curious. How does that belief work for them? How did it get there? What does it mean? It's just finding amusement around this thing that we used to be confronted by.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a much healthier and less confronting way to allow people to be who they are. Number six is recognizing seduction, control, and manipulation, ours and others. Spiritual warriors clearly see signs of manipulation and emotional seduction, ours and others. We don't trust blindly. We trust wisely based on reality. Likewise, we examine our motivations and don't con ourselves or hide behind phony innocence, charm, or naivete.
Right, because we think of seduction as being, you know, sort of the macho or very seductive. It can also be being very naive, innocent.
Oh, yeah. Did I do that?
Yeah.
Me?
Mm-hmm.
And let's see. Seven, being able to self-reflect and self-control, self-reflect and self-confront. Well-differentiated people routinely reflect on their behavior and confront themselves. How did I contribute to this problem, this dull sex life, this disintegrating relationship? Why do I stay with this mean-spirited person? We keep the focus inward, owning up to our mistakes, apologizing when appropriate, and leaving if the other person is harmful to us. Eight, asking for and receiving support without feeling weak or compromised. Because we accept our humanness and fallibility, we reach out for help when we need it. We realize that by receiving, we are allowing someone else to experience the gift of giving. The acts of giving and receiving join us together in a circle of connection.
Yeah, can we stay that with that for just a minute? That's such a big thing.
Yes.
That giving and receiving becomes one thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like allowing ourselves to be cared for is such a huge thing that if I'm not feeling well or down, to let someone make me the chicken soup and give it to me and give some comfort, just like our job when we're dying in life is to let someone be there for us.
Mm-hmm.
Because people want to be, and that's how they stay connected.
Yes.
And so many people feel if they have a need, they're, like I said it earlier, they're weak. But it's also, many people have a very hard time giving to someone. You know, one of the traits of, quote, narcissism, unquote, is that we get mad at our friends or partners when they're sick because then they can't be there for us.
Yeah.
As opposed to going in the us place when somebody's hurting, we want to give to them.
Right, and it takes a lot more generosity to receive than it does to give oftentimes.
Yeah, depending on the person. Some people can sort of only give and some people can only take, and it's having a balance. So
it's a balance,
flow.
Absolutely,
yeah.
As in all things. Nine, giving without an agenda or the feeling that we are giving away a part of ourselves. Well-differentiated people take pleasure in giving from a place of abundance that is free from scorekeeping and hidden agendas.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing others clearly. As we differentiate, we stop categorizing people, drop our expectations and preconceived beliefs, and get to know them for who they are. This allows us to create true intimacy. And last and not least, number 11, learning to comfort and soothe ourselves when forced. Learning to comfort and soothe ourselves when faced with stress or difficulties. When faced with anger, hostility, or trauma, well-differentiated people have the inner resources to calm themselves down and step back from the situation rather than reacting impulsively. Instead of leaping into an argument or losing our temper, we can slow down and not add to the ruckus or descend into someone else's state of turmoil. So overall, as we differentiate, we move from fear to excitement, from separateness to connection, and from insecurity to confidence, from seriousness to playfulness, and from a light heart, we become able to step back and watch ourselves with kindness, curiosity, and a sense of humor. And that puts us in a solid ground to create a vibrant, enduring relationship. When we are able to take refuge in ourselves, we can merge without fear because we feel whole, no matter where we are.
And that brings it all around, that we do merge in a relationship, and that's not codependent, and it's not, quote, enmeshed, but it's a merger that's elastic. We merge, we're in there, and we take that person in our heart when we go somewhere else, but we can also move away from that person to go do other things.
Yes, and it's called interdependence.
Right. They live in our heart at all times.
Mm-hmm. And if you notice, too, Charlotte, in the Parthenon and the lovely Greek architecture where they've got the wonderful pillars there, the giant pillars and the huge,
right,
gorgeous buildings. Well, if you put two pillars side by side, the roof will cave in. And when two people are so enmeshed that they have to be side by side and joined at the hip, it's not a strong support system.
Mm-hmm.
But if you separate them out to where each one is holding something up, then it strengthens the support system. And I like that analogy because it helps me to understand that as much as I can care for somebody, to have them, you know, joined at my hip is keeping them from being all that they are and keeping me from being all that I can be.
Yeah, or another way to look at it is that we do join at the hip, but we can move away from that. We can feel joined at the hip in a very deep emotional level.
Without being in the same room.
Right.
Yes.
And we can be very close, so it has a fluidity to it.
Mm-hmm. And you know it when you have it.
Yeah.
You just do. So I am going to give you my deepest heartfelt thanks, Charlotte, for joining me this evening, and I would like to have you come back. And what is the name of the eighth book that you're writing?
Well, actually, the eighth book is If the Buddha Got Stuck. I'm going to revise the Guide to Empowerment Groups for national use, and then I'm working on a proposal. I'll probably be working on it in the next 10 minutes, called If the Buddha Were a Parent.
Oh, I love that.
And this is a lot about bringing up resourceful children who have an attention span, who can process information for themselves, that kind of thing. Because
wonderful.
We've become kind of a soundbite society. Kids are plugged in.
Oh, yeah, and there's a whole brand-new breed being born. And I'm going to say thanks again to you, Charlotte. That's our time. And thank you so very much. And I want to thank Dawn Newsom at BBS Radio. And I'm Kate Romero, your host of Spiritual Hollywood. Check out my website, www.guardianangelmanagement.com, all spelled out, no spaces. We have a brand new practice I've added to my bag of tricks as a mindful manager and a conscious manager, quantum hypnotherapy for pilot season. So anyone who would love to have an extraordinary experience of hypnotherapy on a quantum level, where my partner Alex Schief will put the client under hypnosis and I go in and do the career and life coaching and the soul blueprint reconstruction. It's just an incredible, amazing, gifted, anointed thing that we're doing, and it's so incredibly effective that I barely have words to describe it. So all of you people who know how to contact us and those that don't, call us at 818-760-0759 for more information or book a session. You won't be sorry you did. And we're offering it at a really great price right now before we get too busy to build our client list. So thank you again, Charlotte. Thank you, everyone. We hope we see you next week where we have Terry Cole Whitaker as our guest. And I know many of you know who Terry Cole Whitaker is. And if you don't, just give her a Google. See you all next week. And thank you so much for joining us here tonight on Spiritual Hollywood. Bye-bye.